So far, I've been hippity-hoppitying and no groin pulls. So I'm very happy. I was worried about that initially. It's okay. It's Tuesday. It's time for book picks from our independent bookseller of the week. Jim Havner is here of Green Toad Bookstore in Oneonta. We always look forward to Jim coming in. He has always a great list, great taste in presenting some of the finest authors of and some of the finest books that are making their way to store shelves this season. Jim, again, is with Green Toad Bookstore. They're at 198 Main Street in Oneonta, New York, and we are thrilled to welcome him back to the book pick segment on the roundtable. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Good morning. It's great to be here.
It's really good to have you. All right. Where would you like to begin?
Well, I'd like to start with a book that's out in paperback that I kind of rediscovered. It's Strange Flowers. It's a novel by Donald Ryan. It's his sixth novel, an Irish writer. And it's a story about 5 years after she went missing. A young woman returns to rural Tipperary in a novel that explores all forms of love. When a young woman vanishes from her parents' home, it can mean only one of two things. Molly Gladney was either pregnant or dead. It was hard to know which one was worse. Strange Flowers, Donald Ryan's sixth novel, opens in the early 1970s in the wake of Molly's disappearance. An empty bed, a missing suitcase, a vast and terrible silence. 5 years later, Molly returns as abruptly as she left. Strange Flowers tells a tale of their fraught homecoming. Revelations loom, but the question that hangs over the novel is whether any explanation can compete with the immaculate mystery of none at all. As ever, Ryan builds exquisite sentences aching to be read aloud, and it has an almost gorgeous, beautiful read to it. I love to actually read this book out loud.
How did I miss this book? This seems amazing.
It is. I had it on the shelf and discovered it a couple of months ago, and I thought, oh, wow. This is great.
Came out last year. It's Strange Flowers, a novel by Donald Ryan. All right, next up.
There's a new book coming out by one of my other favorite authors, Barbara Kingslover, called Demon Copperfield.
No.
No?
Demon Copperhead.
Demon Copperhead, you're right. Whoops.
That's all right.
That's
go
all
ahead.
Right.
And
all
I
right.
only say that, I'll tell you the story, but go ahead. Okay. You do your thing, and then I'll tell you the story.
Demon Copperhead is set in the mountains of southern Appalachia. It is a story of a boy born to a teenage single mother in a single wide trailer with no assets beyond his dead father's good looks, a caustic wit, and a fierce talent for survival. In a plot that never pauses for breath, relayed in his own unsparing voice, he braves the modern perils of foster care, child labor, derelict schools, athletic successes, addiction, disastrous loves, and crushing losses. 150 years ago, Charles Dickens wrote David Copperfield from his experience as a survivor of institutional poverty and its damages to children in his society. Kingslover's enlists Dickens' anger and compassion, and above all, his faith in the transformative powers of a good story. Demon Copperhead speaks for a new generation of lost boys.
This, hands down, is one of the best novels perhaps I've ever read, much less the best novel that I've read all year. It is this incredible, almost page-for-page reckoning with David Copperfield, which I think is my second favorite Dickens book, Great Expectations being the first. And I was talking to Barbara's going to be a guest on our book show when the book comes out, and we were talking. I talked to her yesterday at length, and it is the painstaking detail that she did if you go to a certain point of David Copperfield and go then to Demon Copperhead, you will see the structure is there. It's all so concise. And then putting this character, this young man, into not the Victorian London of Charles Dickens's youth, but Appalachian life at the beginning of the opioid epidemic, and it's heartbreaking, and it is hopeful, and it is beautiful, and she is an amazing author.
Very much so, and I think it will rival her Poisonwood Bible.
Absolutely. She said one thing she said to me as a little teaser. She said that she was pretty sure though that this one wouldn't get into the schools because there's too much profanity.
Probably so. Probably so. I think it's a great upstate New York novel.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. So the next book I really like is just published this yesterday, or published today, Our Missing Hearts by Celeste Naig. It's about 12-year-old Bird Gardner lives in a quiet existence with his loving but broken father, a former linguist who now shelves books in a university library. Bird knows to not ask too many questions, or stand out too much, or stray too far. For a decade, their lives have been governed by laws written to preserve, quote-unquote, American culture in the wake of uneconomic stability and violence. To keep peace and restore prosperity, the authorities are now allowed to relocate children of dissidents, especially those of Asian origin, and libraries have been forced to remove books seen as unpatriotic, including the work of Bird's mother, Margaret, a Chinese-American poet who left the family when he was 9 years old. His journey will take him back to the many folk tales she poured into him when he was a child, through an underground network of librarians, into the lives of children who have been taken. Our Missing Hearts is an old story made new. And this story really resonates with me with what's going on with books in our country and the banned books and the ideas of what's going on with that. It really resonates. And I think Celeste really picked up upon that. And that's something that we see in the bookstore on a weekly basis.
It is also a really amazing tale, and it has a Handmaid's Tale aspect to it, and right. And there's so any book that is about because it's looking at Asian American violence toward Asian Americans, and any materials that are being put out of being not burned in this case, but pulped and to used as toilet paper.
Right,
and it is it's really an incredible book. But at the heart of it is this network of librarians who I still believe are going to save us.
And independent bookstore.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're right. You're right, Jim. You're absolutely right.
Okay, the next book I have is an incredible work of nonfiction called Indigenous Continent by Pekka Hämäläinen. He wrote a fantastic book called Lakota Nation a couple of years ago. There's an old, deeply rooted story about America that goes like this. Columbus discovers a strange continent and brings back untold riches. European nations rush over to America to stake out as much of the New World as possible. Though indigenous people fight back, they can't stop the onslaught, and white imperialists are destined to rule the continent, and history is irreversible march toward indigenous destruction. Yet other long-accepted origin stories, this one is based on myth and distortion. Hämäläinen presents a sweeping counter-narrative that shatters the most basic assumptions about American history. By passing Jamestown, Plymouth Rock, the Revolution, he depicts a sovereign world of Native nations whose members, far from being hopeless victims of colonial violence, and they dominated the continent for centuries after European arrivals. Hämäläinen ultimately contends that the very notion of colonial America is misleading, and we speak instead of an indigenous America that was slowly and unevenly became colonial. He switches the narrative completely in this, and an incredible writer. And if you want to read some productive new history, this is it.
Indigenous Continent by Pekka Hämäläinen. Yes.
Yes.
L-A-I-N-E-N.
Yes.
Leinen.
Danish.
All right. Indigenous Continent. Next up.
Okay. My last book is someone that I saw at the NEBA conference last week and was
New England Independent Booksellers Association is what that stands for.
This is what it sounds like. What Music You Love Says About You by Susan Rogers. This book is a journey into the science and soul of music that reveals the secrets of why your favorite songs move you. But it's also a story of an ordinary audio tech who became the chief engineer for such albums as Prince's Purple Rain. Now an award-winning professor of cognitive neuroscience, who teaches at the Berklee School of Music there in Boston, Rogers leads readers to musical awareness. She explains that we possess a unique listener profile based on our brain's natural responses to seven key dimensions of any song: lyrics, melody, timbre, above the neck, which is intellectually stimulating, below the neck, which is instinctual and rhythmic. Roger guides readers to recognize their musical personality and offers language to describe one's own unique taste. Like most of us, Rogers isn't a musician, but she shows that all of us can be musical. While exploring the science of music and the brain, Roger also takes us behind the scenes of great record making. It's just a lively and a really inclusive style she writes in, and I just thought it was really quite profound how all of us have our own musical imprint.
Absolutely. For more information on Green Toad Bookstore and the great work they do, you can go to their website, greentoadbookstore.com. Visit them in Oneonta at 198 Main Street. Jim will even open the door for you. Jim, always pleasure. Thank you very much.
It's wonderful to be here.
Wonderful to have you here. We look forward to having you back soon. Again, you can find our list as well, his list, on our site, wamc.org/bookpicks. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.